the meeting to order at 7 o'clock. I will be doing the invocation, and the flag salute will be done by Mrs. Shoemaker. Mrs. Shoemaker. Dear Lord, be with us tonight as we make the decisions that affect the students in this district, and be with the students on their last couple weeks of vacation and keep them safe. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mrs. Fuller?
Here.
Mr. Fuller?
Here.
Mr. Spence? Mr. Spence?
Here.
Ms. Scott? Ms. Shoemaker?
Here.
Mrs. Acefield?
Here.
This evening, we're here to honor Lonnie Stearns, the maintenance operations. He's been working with us for 40 years. He's the longest classified employee that we have. We appreciate the service that he's given us all of these years and making this place a great place for our students to be on a daily basis. Ms. Castillo?
Thank you very much. We all would love to take some time and talk to you about him. He is one dedicated employee, I will tell you that, and has been a tremendous asset to this district, will be terribly missed. But tonight we've selected a person who knows him very well to speak about him. And it won't be a roast, so you don't have to worry. But I'd like to call up Jake to say a few words on the behalf of Ruben, myself, and the board. Thank you for your years of service. And Jake?
Thank you. You don't have to be in the district long before you learn the name Lonnie Stearns. You may not know who he is, but you know the name. Mm-hmm. Even before I came to this district 10 years ago, I ran into a couple of vendors, and I was asking, what do you know about West Covina maintenance? Lonnie Stearns. Mm-hmm. He didn't disappoint me.
Mm-hmm.
He has been my right hand for 10 years, and I'm going to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a loss to our department. Sorry. One thing about Lonnie, in a kind of a joking manner, is if you tell him to do something, get out of your way, get out of his way, because it's going to get done.
Yes.
He does it. You just tell him to do it, and it's going to be done. There's a priority with him, though, sometimes. And if he doesn't get it done right away, you kind of go, Lonnie, what about this? Okay, he reprioritizes and blows you off because he's got other priorities.
Mm-hmm.
But the third time, he did it. So I figured after all these years, I probably ought to tell him three times he needs to retire.
Mm-hmm.
I figured that's what it must have been. I must have talked to him about it. So.
Mm-hmm.
He will be missed. Every guy in the maintenance department is going to miss him. Most of the members we have out there have been in the maintenance department for over 25 years. He's the only supervisor they've known that whole time.
Mm.
So he will be missed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
On behalf of the Board of Education, we wanted to present you with this plaque for your dedication of service for all of these years.
Okay.
And like I said before, you really made a difference. And we're all about students, and you made a difference in their lives. Thank you so much. Would you like to say a few words?
I came to West Covina in August of 1967 as a custodian. Got very much involved with students in the school, and going in classrooms and working with the students in art projects, and got pretty well known, even at the school level. I received a special service award from PTA at that time, and then I decided to stop working all my other jobs and put all my time and effort into West Covina. I came here at this valley, and it was the jewel of the valley. She still is the jewel of the valley. And I've had opportunities to go to many, many other districts, but there's no other family like the West Covina family. So I stayed here, and I had some rough times, but my love and my devotion to this district will always be now and forever. I thank you.
And Lonnie is moving out of state. You want to tell us a little bit about where you're going?
Oklahoma City.
You lose something over there?
So he will leave a forwarding address, and we'll continue to talk to him and get his expertise and advice. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mr. Spence would like to say a few words.
Thank you, Lonnie, for everything that you've done for the school district. I knew you back when you were a student, and but we still called you Lonnie as we were running away from whatever we were doing that was wrong. And whenever you turned the corner. But appreciate it. I mean, even then, everybody on campus knew you were one of the hardest working guys on that campus across the street. Everybody knew it, even then. Mm-hmm. I mean, students knew it, principals knew it, teachers knew it, my dad knew it, everybody knew it. Mm-hmm. And so just appreciate everything you've done for the district over all those years. Appreciate it very much.
We're going to move on to the report taken in closed session. The following action was taken in closed session. Before we do that, if you would like to leave, we would love for you to stay for the rest of this meeting. It's going to be so exciting.
Thank you all for coming. Yes. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. And once again, thank you. It was moved by George Fuller and seconded by Jessica Shoemaker to lift the expulsion of student number 185235. The vote was 5-0 with Mr. Cox being absent. In addition, we need to report out that the Board of Education approved the settlement agreement and release for the project under performance bond number 864789P with developers Ridley and Company in the sum of $625,000 in full and final settlement of the district's claim and developers' claim against the district. In addition to developers' payment to the district, developers expressly waive any and all claims it may have against the district for the entire unpaid project contract balance. Exclusive of the withheld retention. Is there anything that any board member would like to report out at this time? We're moving on to items from the floor. I have no blue cards in front of me at this time. Does anybody want to have step up at this time to make any public comments? Seeing no one, we will move on to the organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anyone would like to take off of consent?
Item 13.
Anything anyone would like to add to consent? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended? It was moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by George Fuller to approve the agenda as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes 4-0. That brings us to item number 5, the comprehensive plan for K-8 instruction.
Okay. Board members, we'd like tonight to do a presentation just to keep you informed of the decisions that are being made based on the data that we're seeing, those programs that are succeeding, and we've tried some new things that we believe, based on the scores that we've just received, are working, and we want to give you some of those efforts, both for general ed students and special ed students. This is about improving our instructional plan, so I'd like to call on Ellie Valentine, Assistant Superintendent, to give you some brief remarks and then call on her staff.
Thank you. We're pleased to share with you our preliminary star results that indicate district-wide growth in ABI and also in the percent of students scoring our data, but we are pleased to report that it looks like our students with disabilities made some significant gains in the areas of percent proficient both in language arts and math. As we provided more intervention and have expanded the implementation of our collaborative model for serving students with disabilities, we find that students are experiencing higher levels of success in greater numbers. This evening, staff will present our comprehensive instructional program, including proposed improvements for 2009-2010, especially in the areas of specific assessment, comprehensive monitoring of student progress, and intensive intervention for identified students. So I'd like Cheryl Lawson and Tandy Taylor to step to the podium and present.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. As our superintendent and Ellie had said, we're very excited with the... You can't hear?
Is that on?
Should be.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that we can.
Let's see if we can do it that way. Is that better?
That's better.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Also that. We'll turn their air down, too, a little bit, so that it's just very noisy.
What was that? I'll turn it up. Okay. How is that? Okay. Now I'm going to hear myself. Anyways, we are very excited to come before you. We're excited about our data, but what we realize, it's a comprehensive instructional program for all of our students that is going to make the difference. So tonight we're prepared to present to you the things that we have done, as well as where we plan to go this next year. Our core program, and this is for all students, and if you look at that triangle at the bottom, sometimes you see the tier one or two, three, and three. Tier 1 is all students that we would serve. We have a comprehensive educational program that serves, as I said, all students. It is differentiated as appropriate, as well as individualized and personalized according to student needs. And one of the things that we have is a high-quality assessment and monitoring system that I'm going to discuss in the next few slides here. Our core curriculum, this is what's been board approved. This is standard aligned. It's in the elementary and middle grades for language arts, all the content areas, math, social studies, science, the fine arts, and physical education. All students are given the same access to this curriculum. With this, there's personnel roles. Our personnel roles, as you know, principals, instructional support specialists at the elementary, teachers, special education teachers, and other staff have very specific roles when it comes to serving all students. At our middle level, the other staff could also include the counselors and assistant principals. But this is the time that everybody is a team at the school to make sure that the comprehensive program is given equitably to all students and that they have all access to this. We have an assessment and monitoring system, and some of this is new and some of it is not. But the two that you're probably, or the three that you're most familiar with, are the Benchmarks, Waterford, and Orchard. These are the systems that we have in place that we've been monitoring and watching student progress. The additions are the Start Early Literacy and the Scholastic Reading Inventory is bringing those to all sites so that we'll be able to look comprehensively at each school to determine, are we doing the right thing? Are we meeting the needs of all students? As you know, not all students make it in that comprehensive program. There are students that need additional support. That's about 10 to 15% of the population. These are our at-risk students. They can have needs in language arts, math, social, emotional, and behavior needs, and that they just need a little extra help to help them be successful within the core program. This happens primarily in class, but we also offer after school, before school, and some Saturday school sessions according to school needs as well as student needs. These sessions are targeted, they're purposeful, and they're frequently monitored. This is what we call that tier two, the interventions for those students, as I said, about 10 to 15% of the population. This could be general ed students, but if it best meets the needs of our special ed students as well, they too would be served at this level according to what their needs are. Our curriculum and resources are for this tier are different than the comprehensive. This is more support. We have the programs that you've heard about, the Orchard, Success Maker, Knowledge Box, Waterford. Our math program that we'll be implementing that was approved by the board not too long ago has a specific intervention program for both our elementary and middle level. And we also have the behavior, social, and emotional support systems through PIP, a behavior improvement plan for students that, you know, we have some of those little rascally students once in a while. They're good kids. They just need sometimes the right direction and counseling of how to make those right decisions. And sometimes students need that social skills training. At the middle level, that could also include the counselor, where at the elementary level, it could be the intern. Through all of this, of course, it's parent involvement when it comes to that intervention. It's making sure that we're communicating with the parents and inviting them to the team meetings that we're having. Once the parents meet as a team with the staff and the administrator or the designee, is making sure there's a plan in place. We're monitoring that progress frequently. Data is reviewed, and then once we have that data, it is given to the parents. This is a comprehensive school parent collaborative to ensuring that we are meeting the needs of the students. There are personnel roles, obviously, at this level as well, that go along with what we call that tier two or intervention level. It might be the providing extra supplemental hours, the special education teacher providing consultation support for the general education teacher, and the Title I instructional aid providing targeted intervention at the primary level. I'm going to turn the time over to Cheryl Lawson, who's going to explain more of the intensive level that we're going to be offering.
The intensive level is what would be considered our Tier 3 services, and those are for students who, with the Tier 1 and Tier 2 interventions, have not shown significant progress. So those students then would be included in Tier 3. As we see it now, those will be primarily special education students at this point. At some point, there may be students who will receive intensive services who aren't identified, but we're working toward that goal. So these are the resources that we're currently using, and a couple that we're suggesting. The Open Court is being used now, and Reading Mastery would be used in grades 1 through 3. It's now currently used at the elementary level. What we're anticipating is being able to implement Read 180 and System 44, and this would be in the elementary schools through the middle schools. This is an intensive program, very impressive, very comprehensive. And when I went to the workshop that we had, the presentation, I just was really impressed with how much it honed in on what students needed. It provided an individualized kind of prescriptive per student need, and it allowed teachers to work with multiple students at different levels at one time. I spoke with a neuropsychologist recently who was quoting an author of a book, another neuropsychologist who had reviewed a lot of interventions and really was impressed with this one. It was one of the three that he would recommend. And as we had this conversation, I said, you know, we're really looking into this. He said, it'll work. If you use all of the components, you'll see results. So I was very excited about that. This also includes, it's a reading component and a writing component. And then reasoning and writing would still be included in the primary grades. Saxon math is the intervention for K through 8. And then we have some other things. Depending on the school site, Foothill Family Clinic provides some counseling services. Pacific Clinics provide some counseling services. The school psychologists and interns provide individual and small group counseling. And then we have the development of the behavior teaching plans, which is done with a special education teacher and the school psychologist and the team. The assessment monitoring piece is heavily used in the Read 180. Teachers are able to read the feedback because there's a computerized component to it. Every 6 to 8 weeks, they can get accurate data on how students are progressing in the individual skill levels. The SRI is embedded into it, and the students are assessed at the beginning, middle, and to see how much they progressed in terms of their reading skills. We would continue to use Stidell, which allows us to see how students are progressing toward IEP goals and develop additional goals from that. Some of our students will have the benchmarks. Authentic assessments are always ways of us determining how students are progressing in the skills that are written into their IEPs and then progress toward IEP goals. So those would be all ways of monitoring student progress. And then the personnel roles. The principal, again, would be the leadership and support. And the principals that I've talked to are pretty excited about a new intervention program that would be district-wide. So we all would be doing the same thing. If a student goes from one school to another, we would have the same level of intervention at each site. The teachers would be responsible. These are the general education teachers would be responsible to know the IEP goals and to implement the strategies and accommodations in the general ed program. And then the special education teacher would provide the intensive instruction and also support the general ed teacher in that classroom. And special education instructional aides, of course, would provide targeted support as identified in their IEPs as directed by the special education teacher. And the next steps involve a lot of professional development in how to use the curriculum, how to monitor progress using the curriculum, how to analyze data, development of IEPs, and how to consult when the students are receiving services in general education. I think we've been really encouraged by how students have done as we've pushed more into the general ed setting for a lot of students. We're seeing that students are really benefiting from that, and teachers are becoming, general education teachers are becoming more proficient in working with students with disabilities, but they continue to need support, and we need to continue that collaboration between special education and general education teachers. And then continuing with the collaborative model and just monitoring program quality and student achievement. So those are our goals. So that concludes our presentation.
Questions?
Yes.
Did you see that?
Well, first, where are we going to implement Read 180?
In all of the elementary schools and middle schools for specific students.
For specific students.
Right. Because not all students require that level of intervention.
Okay, how are we going to deal with the state standards with Read 180, since Read 180 doesn't really address literature or some of the other standards that address? How are we going to make sure that we're not losing curriculum in terms of English or English language arts or literacy and Read 180? Or are we going to concentrate on Read 180 at the sacrifice of the other standards?
Read 180 actually covers the state standards, so it can be used as a core for those students, which is why we were really interested in it. Because the difficulty of an intervention is always just what you're talking about. You know, what are we pulling away from to provide this? I think a lot has gone into the development of this program to make sure that it is aligned with state standards so that it can be used as a core program.
Well, the eighth grade standard for writing is 500, 700 word essay. You say I can walk into a Read 180 room and see?
There is a writing component.
But at a 500, 700 word essay? Or where would that write? Or is it that a 10 minute quick write?
I don't think it's a 10 minute quick write. I think it's a progression of developing those writing skills.
Okay. Okay, well, I'd like to stop by and see how that works. But, I mean, and I understand that if a child can't read at the seventh grade, we're not going anywhere. We have to identify why, and they're probably not going to have any writing or limited in terms of that. So I understand where we're going. But I'm also somewhat concerned in the intensity of Read 180 at the sacrifice of some of the others. where it could go, and we're only doing with selected. Also, the role of the special ed teacher, special education teacher, I saw a lot of consult and things of this nature. Where, I guess it's a two-pronged question. Are we expecting the special ed teacher in the classroom participating or just sitting back and waiting for the elementary teacher to come and consult? Or are they actively engaged? And are we moving away from the pullout and this child will remain in this classroom during instruction? And how are we going to get supplemental services while we're doing that?
Yeah, that's a large question. I think what we've looked at, what I've tried to look at, is what meets the needs of varying students, because some students benefit from the general education setting, having the teacher come in and co-teach lessons. Some need the intensive remediation. So we're trying to have a combination of those things. So yes, some students would be served in the classroom. Sometimes it would be a collaborative setting. The intensive remediation would be, it's a 90-minute block a day, so that would be the special education teacher doing that with the students, providing that service.
Where does the 90 minutes come from, though?
The language arts period.
So they come out of the language arts room and
yes.
go to another room? And with just the RSP teacher, or?
The RSP teacher and or the SDC teacher. Remember, we shifted because we had a lot of SDC classes, fewer RSP teachers. We made the switch this year to provide more RSP time at the schools, less SDC time. So those students are, there's more mainstreaming, and RSP teachers are at elementary schools now a full day. So they have more time to provide those services both in general ed and, you know, in a pullout setting. So the pullout setting, what we envision is this intensive remediation. So it's not bring your classwork and we'll help you with it. It's remediate and then move you back in. So there's a pre and post testing. When students are ready, if they don't require this level of service, or when they're ready to return to general ed, then they go back and fit in with their general ed group.
And I think you see where I'm going. My first off, I want to see, I myself, from where I'm sitting, want to see special education teachers engaged with students. Mm-hmm. I like to see teachers with students. I don't like to see teachers in offices waiting for somebody
okay.
to come over
right.
and talk and go back again on consultation. And I think the best offer is a teacher in the classroom is going to bring that mm-hmm. to the classroom and to engage the student. At the same time, I'm happy that I don't, I'm a big fan of least restrictive environment. I'm a big fan of keeping the students in the classroom any way that we possibly can, because as we pull students out, they're losing instruction in the general curriculum, as you know, to be remediated. So they're remediated, and now they're behind because they went to another classroom, because they were out of this classroom. So I like to keep that is separated as much as possible. I like to see students in the classroom receiving instruction when they're involved. I do have a concern about Read 180, and that is, yes, I know they, because I've gone through the training, they advertise around the state standards and everything until you put the state standards next to them and implement it, and I do, and it is, it becomes a matter of where do you go with this? If this child, if they're in the eighth grade or seventh grade and they're only reading at the first grade level, what do you do with it? So to go with it, although I think overall it does help students if it's implemented properly, and we definitely need some sort of remediation program. I'm glad to see that we're moving forward with an RTI-type program. The more that we can do that, as you know, the fewer students are going to be classified in special education, the fewer students they're going to need the services. We reduce our costs and being able to implement further to go along with it. And the same token, again, with the special education teacher, the caseload is nice to put together for in terms of it, but all the students are in there in terms of need. And if a student is in Tier 3 or Tier 2, they shouldn't have to wait for an IEP or any delegation, they should be engaged with that student and delivering services to that student, regardless of what their classification is, in terms of that in the classroom. So, but that's my.
Can I just make a point of clarification? Because I think Mr. Fuller has made some really important points that perhaps didn't come across in the presentation. There never is a program that takes the place of a teacher. Programs and machines, computers, nothing's been invented that can basically just take any student in all of these classes and teach them everything they need to know. So I think the first thing we need to say is that first teaching and standard-aligned teaching and who goes on READ 180 for what purpose is still the call of the professional. So you're absolutely right in saying, you know, what is the teacher's role? Because they have the most important role. And this program, what it will do as a tool for the teacher, not as the teacher for the student, but as a tool for the teacher, is support learning interventions for different students in the class that may need it at whatever point they need it. So the teacher is still the orchestrator of the teaching and who to put on what program at what time in order to supplement that. Obviously, the accountability for the learning is always on the teacher. We've looked at our special education scores and have seen that mainstreaming a lot more students into a collaborative situation has really benefited many kids. There are still those students who have special needs that require more intensity that perhaps don't belong there all day. But again, we're getting better at assessing the needs, differentiating the prescription, and I think your point is very valid to say that, you know, READ 180 in and of itself, giving that to someone isn't going to make the difference. It's the use of these tools that we provide for our teachers. But we're very excited because for the first time in many, many years, we've seen targeted programs for special needs students. And to the best of our ability, we believe that we've assessed and done a lot of research about what the best programs are out there. And this was one that we were all very excited about and that I believe is going to supplement the instruction of the teacher. So thank you for your questions.
And by the way, I know there's several teams.
Yes.
But there's one at Walnut Grove that was
outstanding. Outstanding.
Very well.
A team at Walnut Grove that's done, yeah.
Very well.
So absolutely. Thank you.
On page 4 of the handout you gave us, the slides, assessments and monitoring, it says parent is invited to a SIT. I don't know what that is.
Student intervention team. SFA schools might call them family support teams. SST has been used, student study teams.
Okay.
That's kind of, I guess, the current educational lingo. And I guess
but
I apologize.
SIT is the most current? I just haven't heard of it before. So
I guess it's the most current, yes.
Okay.
I acronym.
Yeah.
Student intervention team is.
The purpose still remains right. The same, and that's to bring together parents and a group of educators to assess student progress and to determine what's the best course of action.
On that same slide, it talked about progress is reported to parents. I understand how it's done in Tier 3. How is that done for Tier 2 parents?
Progress reports are given to all students at the midpoint before the first report card, which is in December. But per our board policy and what is given to teachers, at any time a student is not meeting the necessary gains, the parent is to be notified and be contacted immediately. So in Tier 1, the moment a student is seen to be struggling, they don't have to wait for that progress report time, but it can be a written note, a phone call, a variety of ways. Sometimes
even a parent-initiated
absolutely
request.
So it's not what I was assuming, and I assumed incorrectly, is for a student with an IEP, they get progress reports that say how they're moving towards achieving their goals. So a student in Tier 2 would not get have goals written for them and a progress report that stated their progress.
Right, because at this time they have not been identified.
No, I know.
Although, at times, yes, teachers do identify specific things. I will reflect as myself as a teacher, you know, that had a student was struggling, and a parent and I may have come up with a, you know, behavior thing, you know, how many stars after so
okay.
many days and such. So, yes, there could absolutely be goals. It would be, once again, kind of dependent individually on a student's need and the communication a parent needs in order to make sure these steps are taken and that they're successful.
Okay.
But that school-parent partnership, absolutely.
The on the page 5 on intensive interventions, it, on the third tier, it said there's only going to be 2 to 5% of students there. We have, since I've been on the board, 7 to 11% of students that are in special ed. Are you saying not all special education students are going to be in tier 3?
I'll try, and then you can answer. But when we're defining this population now, it's the difference between those that are mainstreamed and those that are not. So that's why you see the change in numbers. There's a lot more students in special ed that used to be in a self-contained program that are now in a collaborative class.
So we're only going to have 2 to 5% in a special day class.
Yes.
Is that what I'm seeing
well,
here?
Tier three.
Tier three, yeah.
Whatever tier right. three means.
Well, just clarification,
yeah.
What I understand you saying tier three is now is a special day class.
Well, remember, you want to go back? That's sort of a yes and a no. It's, if we're defining special day class as pull-out services, when I think of special day, I'm just concerned that special day class might mean that they're in all day long. So we're not talking necessarily about that, but being pulled out from the general ed population.
Or at least part of the day, right. They'd be considered tier three.
Right.
I couldn't understand the discrepancy mm-hmm. with the numbers. You were talking about the reading math on the page 6, the curriculum and resources. The reading mastery grade 1 through 3 and read 180, Mr. Fuller asked some questions on that. They will not be in open court or in Success for All then. They'll be in this alternative program?
If that's what they need, yes.
So they wouldn't have both. They would be in either or.
Right.
And what if they could benefit from both in after school or Saturday program have the, and I don't know anything about either of these programs, for the Reading 180 or the Reading Mastery, could that be used as just a supplemental program after school or on Saturdays?
You know, I talked to one district that actually used it just after school. It wasn't as successful. What they need is a 90-minute block, a minimum of 90 minutes for it to be successful, and it needs to be consistent. You know, obviously, if you have it after school or Saturday, as far as attendance, you may not have regular attendance. But from what I saw of the materials, it's very comprehensive. So it's not just a little piece of an intervention. It's a whole large, comprehensive. There is vocabulary development. There's writing skills. There's spelling skills. There's root words. There's understanding concepts, there's decoding, it's whatever part that student requires in the whole continuum of language arts is provided in it. It was really pretty impressive.
You had talked about the neuropsychologist saying that all components needed to be used to really and to be implemented before you could see the type of success that these programs are advertising. What are we doing to ensure that all of the teachers that are using these products are understand how to use all of the components?
Part of what we've done is, what we've included in our proposal is 2 days of training, professional training, and then ongoing monitoring, where they'll send someone out to observe, I believe it's 4 times a year, to actually go into that classroom, observe the teacher using the program, and then actually have conversations with them about, you know, how they're doing it and, you know, the success and questions and all of that. I think what I was referring to is it's a very expensive program, and I think sometimes people try to get by just doing parts of it and not doing the whole thing. And I think that's what he was talking about. If you do the whole program as it's designed,
right.
You know, as I say, the one school district that did it just after school didn't see the success. And that's why we just really want a good intervention that's going to make a difference for kids. So that, and we want to start early. You know, we want to give them that intervention and then get them back into, you know, the regular ed classroom if possible. And it's just, I was just very impressed. And I've seen a lot of intervention programs. And some of them are very dull. This is very engaging to students.
And I think whether it's general ed or special ed, it's that constant administrator who has been very successful, as you can see with our test scores, who have been monitoring and going into the classrooms and becoming very knowledgeable about them, the programs themselves, to be able to help support teachers.
Mr. Ford?
Just a quick comment came to mind. Yes, READ 180 has a tremendous amount of data. READ 180 has useful data. READ 180 is tremendous in that aspect. And if you could get in the contract that teachers could access that from home, they will love you for death. Because right now, I don't think all of them can. And then they have to stay after school, and it's a tremendous amount of work that might could be done.
Good to know. Stadell, I'm not familiar, said you used it to track the IEP goals.
Stadell is it's a computer program, and actually students go on. You're able to design it for specific IEP goals,
mm-hmm.
and then students actually demonstrate on the program how successful they are at completing those goals, how they've mastered those concepts, and then, you know, and at what percentage level, and then you can develop goals from that. So our teachers have been using that in IEP development.
But it would also could be used in the intervention program, I'm assuming? Or is it only used for special education students? It's for writing the IEP goals, but it sounds like it could be beneficial for intervention students as well if you can go in and plug in what they need to learn,
and then
it gives you progress reports. Could it be used both ways?
Well, I think it can mesh in that way because you're going to be getting data from two sources, in other words.
Okay. And same survey. I think I'm just, it looks like you answered the rest of my questions. Mr. Spence, I believe you had something.
Yeah, I did. Let me ask about READ 180 and then answer the other question that I had. But READ 180, again, who is going to be using READ 180? Because since they're not going to be an open quarter SFA, who's going to be using that?
Which students or which?
Which students?
The
special education students?
Tier 3.
At this point, it's the special education students who need that type of intervention, because not all of them do. So, for example, at a middle school, we're going to look at grades, if a student was there last year,
mm-hmm.
How they did in their language arts class. That'll be part of it. And also there's a pretest on it that tells you whether a student would be appropriate for that program.
Because there are studies that, you know, there was one out of Ohio that did it over 3 years that showed that READ 180 was not an effective tool
mm-hmm.
for adolescent reading scores. And so I'm trying to just get an idea. Obviously, if what we're using with Open Court and Success for All isn't working, you know, I don't have an objection trying another type of, you know, reading program, but Open Court and Success for All do have a lot of research showing that it's effective, and it has been effective if you look at many of our school scores. So that's why, if someone's not making it, okay, fine, you know, Open Court's not working or Success for All is not working, we got to do something different, that's fine. But what I'm just concerned about, because some of the studies were a little mixed when they did with the overall population, didn't seem to be an effective tool, at least in some places, especially among adolescent, middle school age kids.
Right. And we wouldn't pull out a student out of general ed or out of those programs, the Open Court, if they're being successful.
Okay.
These are the students that aren't. But what we're finding is we need a targeted intervention for some students that just aren't grasping certain concepts. You know, maybe it's comprehension in language. They need more intensive work on that. Sometimes it's just the phonemic awareness. It's way back to the basics. So as you know, as the grades go up, we don't continue to teach those skills.
Right.
So this is something for them at all the levels. So it can be a middle school level student that gets phonemic awareness or an elementary school level. But the materials are geared toward middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't look babyish. You know, we're not taking them back to second grade.
Right, they're not reading with eight-year-olds or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, that is a concern of mine because I don't want to mess with what's being successful
right.
in
and
order to try. The other question I had is I appreciate this report because it gave I think, a very good overview of the individual, focusing on the individual student that we're doing throughout the whole school district. When we look at test scores, like we have the preliminary scores, and I realize they're not all final, you know, we look at them by school. We don't look at them by individual. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are many of our schools that did not meet the district's goal mm-hmm. in the API. Some of them did very well. And when you look at the AYP comparison, which to me is a little bit more valuable because it's how many kids actually meet standard, you know, we do have some schools that since 2006, we have one school that, you know, is below in 2009 what they were in 2006 in English language, mm-hmm. you know, that didn't meet the district's goal. And, you know, only four of the districts actually, or five in English language, met the goal. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you break up a culture of a school environment when you look, and from my point of view, it's very stagnant, you know, where, you know, in 2006, if you're 44% of your kids meet your English language, of course, that means 56% didn't, and in 2009, 47% meet it, you're still below that 50% threshold. How do you break up a culture that somehow, you know, because at some of these schools we've moved teachers around and all kinds of stuff, and how do you address that issue? How do you address that issue to improve the individual student, you know, scores or learning? How do you do that? Because some of our schools, you know, and, you know, I've said this before, they make no sense why, you know, West Covina, while there's different demographics in West Covina, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like a lot of school districts that have very varied demographics. And, you know, you can look at one school and then look at another school down the street, mm-hmm. and there's a big disparity in the number of kids that are meeting grade level standards. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do we address that?
I think you're asking a larger question than they've addressed, and that is that there's a couple of things that you have to keep in mind, and that is that the scores that you see and results that you see, as you said, are not the same kids year after year. Faculties change, students change. Even our most successful schools, the ones that have already passed 800, have students within their culture that have not improved, even with the best programs. And that's why when principals come and speak before the board, they usually talk about fidelity of implementation, you know, and all of those words that you've heard. And so what we're doing is we're getting closer to differentiating instruction in a way that meets more and more kids' needs. But some teachers have had more practice in that, and the schools that you're seeing that aren't moving quite as fast, they're still struggling with standards-based instruction. And so we are looking at what the new adoptions are going to be, what's going to happen with Success for All, what's going to happen with the Open Court. And as we look at those schools that continue to struggle, we're going to have to mandate that as a district, as a school curriculum. Right now, that school that you're talking about has been trying Open Court for as long as you've all adopted it.
Well, no, they came after, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still not succeeding, even with a successful program, mm-hmm. right? So there's sort of a three-part series, and that is, you know, you have the good materials that you need to use, the teacher's ability to impart and use those materials, and then kids who, even with teachers that have imparted the materials that meet 80% of the kids, still have 20% of the kids that they need these intervention programs to target one-on-one instruction to supplement Open Court or Success for All. You know, even within our schools, you have seen Success for All at our charter school, Success for All at Orangewood, Success for All at Melinda, all using the same program. But individuals, and this is why, you know, I said to Mr. Fuller, individuals' use of tools and materials to teach and student needs aren't always matched. And so we have a lot of work to do with some of our teachers in terms of their ability to use some of the good programs and resources we've given them. So this particular presentation needs to come back at a time where we are going to be making new adoptions for the district. Until then, it isn't worth our money to create, say, for example, at West Cove, okay, a requirement that they go to Success for All at this point. But it may be something that come a year from now, or I don't remember, when is the adoptions for elementary reading programs?
This is the adoption okay. You're currently, but with the state budget,
I was about to say, assuming there's funding, yeah.
Yeah. When and if there is such a thing, we need to really come to the board with a more prescribed and less choice in terms of what schools do that are not succeeding.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right about that. I mean, we just can't keep going along with waiting for them to learn.
Well, you know, and I appreciate this stuff, Ellie, and something that would be helpful to me would be all the schools had set their own goals, you know, on what their achievement rates were going to be. If we could have that, like, as part of, you know, because I don't know if they met what their individual growth goals were.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and find each of the presentations. So if you could include that in the matrix that, because each school said, oh, we want to try to improve X amount.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if they met it or not, even though some did improve, I don't know if they met the goal they had set for themselves.
Yeah. I
know whether or not they met the district goal.
Yeah. Well, I can give you an example. I know because we all focused on this, that California's principal came forward and said, I want to make up the 23 points that I've lost plus another, you know, 5. Well, she did meet the 23, but she didn't add. Right? So we do have schools that came before the board and said, you know, here's our target. Some surpassed that target.
Right.
Cameron gave themselves a lower percentage of increase that they were going to do. They wanted to meet, you know, their AYP, and yet they doubled that. So we can come back to you with that information.
I mean, just as part of the
information. Oh, absolutely.
That's all.
Absolutely.
That's all I have. Thank you.
The piggybacking on what Mr. Spence said and something that was in the presentation, you said that you were going to try to make sure that each site had the same level of service. And we know that at each site, they choose to do things differently. Some have Saturday school, some don't. Some have after school, some have before school. But this said that you were going to try to make sure that they had the same level of service. My son was in 3 different elementary schools because he was in a special day class. That the level of service may have been the same, but the programs differed significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a child in a special day class that has to go, doesn't get to stay at their home school, they move 2 years, 4 years at the most until they're in middle school, how do you guarantee that they're at least, maybe not the same level of service, but they're getting service that is, if they're in open court, they stay in open court. If they're in Success for All, they go to a Success for All school. How are you looking at that? Because they may be the same quality, or we say they're the same quality, but they're completely different programs.
It is of a great concern, and we are looking at trying to create what you could say that the kind of a foundational services, especially in that Tier 2, with the board's support and some of those things, is the Waterford has been brought in to be able to ensure that every elementary school student has that. Same with the Orchard. I'll let Cheryl talk about, you know,
how we're
doing Standards Plus. So there are some things. And, yes, absolutely, schools have to be able to customize because you have to meet your clientele's needs as well. So there will be some differentiation at the school sites, but we want to ensure that, for your son's example or any child, if they leave a school and have to move to another school, that there is a level or a foundational of services that are accessible by all students. And then each site, once again, would absolutely have to customize because they have a clientele that they have to serve, and there's going to be differentiated that would be needed. Did you want to address the placement of students as we're collaborating and moving?
Right. I think what I was talking about is if we do Read 180, we do Read 180 in all the schools. So if a student goes from one school to another, they have access to the same intervention program.
So what if it's a student that's pulled out for part of the time, but they're in a Success for All school, and then their next step is going to be in an open court school? Does that happen, and how is that?
Merlinda and Orangewood.
It would definitely happen with kids who leave Edison.
Don't
go back into the regular school,
mm-hmm.
or unless I went to Merlinda or Orangewood.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I would answer it this way. Either tool is a tool that teachers have been trained in. So if the student's going from a Success for All school to an open court school, hopefully the level of equalizing the service is equal because they're both research-based programs that have worked. I think what Cheryl is trying to explain is that there's a small group of students that the programs that we've been using aren't working for them, and so they're going to be spread. So they're going to be spread at every site. So no matter where that child goes, if he's having Read 180 here and he's bumped somewhere else, he'll have it there as well.
And what she was saying, that she was hoping that this would be an intervention program and that they would be more included into the typical program. Well, we don't have that differs, and I know that there's students who have gone from Success for All to Open Court, right. And there's been a problem with that.
Right.
Is there a way to keep students on a track where they'd stay with the same reading program if they were benefiting from that particular reading program? Because there is differences between, they're both state standards, but there's difference in how it's presented to the student in between Open Court and Success for All. Mm-hmm. And have you thought about having a track for those students?
I think one of the things we did this year in making the switch to more RSP services versus SDC classes is getting more students back to their home school. We had talked about that, feeling that they needed to be at their home school. You know, it's difficult to make huge changes, so you have to kind of make intermediary changes. So we did that in this case, building up our RSP services. What I would like to eventually do is, and this won't be for all students, but sort of blur the lines between SDC and RSP. So in other words, it's how much pullout you need. So you don't necessarily need a class sitting somewhere at a school, but you need a certain level of pullout. Knowing that there's only so many resources, we had to divide it the way it's divided now, but it's a move toward getting more students in general ed and having pull out just for what they need rather than for the whole day. And we're seeing more and more students being successful. And there were students that I believed were in SDC that didn't require an SDC program. They just ended up in SDC because there wasn't enough of that middle ground service. So now we're switching back to that. So as we get more students back to their home schools, unless they move, they would have the same curriculum at that school. So I think that's the direction that we're heading in.
It'll take a while to get there.
Huh?
What I'm hearing you say is that it's not going to happen today, and it probably won't happen tomorrow. But hopefully, a student will be able to stay with the program they started in throughout their elementary, at least, because Success for All and Open Court are elementary school.
Usually, if there's a move, and I'm trying to figure out who you would be talking about.
I'm talking about a child going from Orangewood to Monta Vista.
Okay. If a child needs to go from Orangewood to Monta Vista, if indeed he goes to Monta Vista, is because there's no room for him at Orangewood.
No, Orangewood only
Our STCs, you know, like 1-2 was at a certain school, and 3-4 was at another school. Mm-hmm.
When the decision is made, obviously you're going to put the child where he's going to succeed if you can help that. All I'm saying is there are times where you can't help that. You can't help that because either the class is full or, you know, there's a situation where the parent doesn't want to go there or, I mean, I don't know. But you're talking sort of about something we're trying to get away from. Okay. What we'd like to do, and I think what we'd like them to walk away believing, is that our effort is to keep the students in their neighborhood school and keep them there throughout their entire time that they're there. So if it's a kindergarten at Merlinda, he leaves sixth grade from Merlinda.
And that would be an answer to the problem
that continuity.
I've seen.
Right.
That they would have that continuity throughout.
But mostly also the chances are that most of our schools are open court. Right? So If you have to pick between, you know, a child going from Success for All to Success for All, and there's only Merlinda available, there's not much you can do unless they have an opening. So all I'm saying is that the logistics and where you're going is what we want to do by keeping them within the school. Because the goal is, yes, keep the continuity of the program.
Ms. Shoemaker.
I just had a clarifying question. Ms. Polis asked a question earlier about Tier 3 and what I heard was that if you are in an SDC class, you are considered Tier 3.
Mm.
And if you're Tier 3, the curriculum you would get is Read 180.
No.
You know, it's not as defined as that. We have students
in an STC class mm-hmm. who can read at grade level.
So you are talking
but a different type of disability that they have is causing the requirement mm-hmm. of an STC intervention. So that's why you can't line it up that way. Mm-hmm. I have a number of students with autism, students with emotional disabilities, who may require an STC placement, but academics is not the issue.
Okay.
So they could mainstream into a general ed class for that, not get the READ 180 or the System 44, but I could have an RSP student that only needs READ 180 or System 44 because they seem to do well in math and they get along fine in the classroom and other areas. So that's why I say it's not as cut and dry with the varying disabilities.
Thank you.
Just go quick. What about grade 22? This is 3668, right?
Right.
What about grades 1 and 2?
So kindergarten, they're using open core. First grade, second grade, they're using open core. If they need to use something else, they use the reading mastery and the...
But we're still implementing RTI at first and second.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the special ed part of it. You're talking
well,
about
I'm reading this as you presented a tier 1, 2, and 3 concept, right? And take out the word special education. Okay, some of these students will end up in special education because they need services and they're entitled to them under the law, and we need to provide those. But what we're really trying to do is identify students that need interventions and get them into intervention regardless of what their classification is, and further intervention if we need to, and let the rest of it fall. Are we doing that in the first and second grade?
Absolutely. And okay. That's where it is, that tier 1 and 2. If it's tier 1, it's just, they see a child having difficulty, right? Tier 2, so absolutely.
Right.
K1, two, every student has access.
Because the problem, I mean, I know you know this, but I mean, being rhetorical, but the situation being that a child at the first grade that's falling a month or two behind needs, we much better off intervening then than waiting until the third grade where they haven't progressed. And so I appreciate that. The other thing, are we, in two parts, are we assisting the general ed students or teachers with working with special education students? Because I know some just, it's a transition for them. They're used to, they went to SDC and they went there. And second off, are we making sure that our teachers know that it's fraught with landmines to decide they know based upon their experience that they know the problem to the child and what to do about it without an assessment? Things that we don't do that. We assess and we do things. So are we getting that point across to all our teachers? Because it's not just, it's, you hear that, oh, that's my ADHD child, and you're sitting there. I wouldn't say that. You may not want to say that. And I know they're trying to be good, and I know they have a lot of experience. So are we assisting general ed teachers in dealing with students now that they have, they're in their classroom, and we are expecting them to work with them?
Absolutely. Teachers have identified themselves as this being a need, especially as they know as we're moving into this, and administrators have been very supportive. Ms. Lawson has provided resources to help schools. So, yes, we wish teachers were perfect. We know that
we're just glad they're there and doing a
but
good job.
They recognize it. They want it. And I think everybody is very excited of knowing that they're just going to be meeting student needs in a wide variety of ways.
There's no other questions. Thank you for your presentation and your time. Oh, it's an action item?
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Can I ask a question?
Mr. Spence.
So does that mean we're approving all these things, System 44, READ 180, all those things, in the context that were described here?
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously with those of us present. Mr. Spence, you took off item number 13.
I did. Thank you for allowing me to. I've talked to staff about the item, and I would be voting against it.
Is that the only?
Huh?
I'll move this item.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
One opposed?
Yep.
3-1 with Mr. Spence being the no vote.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Ms. Shoemaker and Mr. Fuller seconded? I'm sorry. That brings us to the end of our meeting. The dates to remember are...
Do we have board comment?
Do it after, sorry. August 20th, the back-to-school breakfast. August 24th, first day of school. September 7th will be closed, and our next board meeting will be on September 8th. Further board discussion?
Yes. I just want to say publicly, I've been approached by several people. I just want to say, to the best of my knowledge, and from where I've traveled, that whoever government officials going around saying that board members live in the city of industry, to my knowledge, they live in the West Covina Unified School District. And I'll drop it there.
Okay. Any further board discussion?
I have two items. Yes, well, actually, I didn't know people could move into the city of industry, but that's a whole different issue. That's a whole different issue. But, one is we had a discussion a while back about high school graduation, and part of that was about the problems with our bleachers during graduation. And at one point, a long, long time ago, we had approved a plan that would, if the money was available, dealing with modernization, replace those bleachers. And I was wondering if at some point or what the time frame is that we can get a report back on where we are. I mean, there was another part of that, too, the science or
science
another
building.
Classroom facility or something
it
as well.
It was the weight. It was the PE rooms under the...
Well, yeah, but
oh, no,
actually,
the
there were several
yes.
modernization
yes.
things. There were several
the
modernization
science
things.
The science room wing.
Yeah, there were several modernization things as well that we had approved. And I was just wondering if, you know, if we could get a report back at some point on, I guess, the status of the money or where we are on those. Because that was a long time ago now.
Mm-hmm. We will bring that back to you.
Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is you may have heard in the news that California is in danger of losing federal money for education because we're one of a handful of states that has a state law that bars student performance being used in teacher evaluations. And I'd like to bring back a resolution at our next meeting. There's legislation that would change that in California so the board could discuss it and possibly vote on it at our next meeting.
We'd like to be first in line for that to happen in our district, if we can.
So
what?
If we could have a, if it gets through the state of California, I mean, Mr. Spence is a very hopeful person, which I think it's great.
Well, there's a lot of money that you know, they have to choose between.
Well, when you bring it back, would you bring back existing language? Because I've also heard that.
Yeah. Well, there's a bill. There's a bill that's being introduced, but the 2006 law that was signed by the governor has that in it.
Yeah, if we could see the 2006 one,
that'd be fun. Mr. Fuller, that'd be fun.
It's a nice headline, but when you get to the meat of it.
Hey, if they deny the money, the meat's there.
We'll have plenty of time to discuss this when it's agendized. Any further comments?
Oh, and Mr. Cox texted me and wants to know what's going on.
That means he's doing well and recovering very well.
He misses this already.
We miss him, too.
It means he's very ill.
We're adjourning the meeting at 8:10.
Thank you.